Next week marks the 70th anniversary of the partition of India and Pakistan. At midnight on August 14, 1947, the British ended their rule over the Indian subcontinent and divided it into Hindu-majority India and Muslim-majority Pakistan. Now, that break led to a massive spasm of violence. Millions of people were forced to flee their homes, and as many as 1 million people died as families and communities were torn apart. So what is the legacy of partition, particularly in Pakistan? Moeed Yusuf is Associate Vice President of the Asia Center at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and he joins us from Lahore, Pakistan, via Skype. Moeed, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, Moeed, I guess for people who don't really study South Asia very closely, it's easy to think of this upcoming anniversary as the anniversary of Indian independence, but it's also the anniversary of Pakistan. So how is it being marked in Pakistan this year?
Pakistanis, you know, quite frankly, just like Indians, it's a special day for them. It's a very patriotic, very nationalistic, but yet a very rowdy country, if you will, and a rowdy polity when it comes to marking their independence. So you've got the state level sort of demonstrations of force, of grandeur. There's a bit of British pomp still left over, I would say, from the British time. So it is very much a special day. There isn't much that the society does as a collective on the day. But the state does put out a lot of pomp right from the beginning of the day, right through. And you'll see that streets are clogged, people are out, people are having fun. It's more a joyous celebratory occasion than anything else.
Interesting. Perhaps, you know, these 70 years later, it makes sense. But of course, we should remember that partition and the birth of these two nations was also an event that was, you know, awash in blood, right? 12 to 15 million people having to flee their homes. An estimated 1 million people died and killed along the way. Horrible violence done to women, again, on both sides. So just remind us. I mean, and in fact, if I understand correctly, your family had to move significantly during this time. Is that right?
That's correct. So my grandfather actually and all of his family and some of my uncles did move from what is Agra in UP in India today, which is India's largest state. So yes, absolutely. It's very personal for us and myself as well. Look, you're absolutely right. Partition has a very dark side to it. The difference here, Megan, is that in India, partition, I think, still very much reminds them of an occasion on which the country was split. In Pakistan, you've almost blocked that part of it out. And the conversation really is about a new country, a new promise, a cherished homeland that was expected, that was fought for. So there's a very positive connotation attached to that event and independence. And sort of the dark and the unfortunate side of it does not really come up in the conversation as much as it does in India. Also remember that 70 years down, the generation that actually went through partition, who saw the horrors of partition, has now, you know, a lot of them have passed away, and sort of you've just got the last sort of remnants left. So it doesn't really make it into the national narrative in Pakistan as it perhaps does in India.
Oh, that's very interesting. Nevertheless, you know, history should be observed, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But Pakistan itself also went through a considerable period of tumult after the creation of the nation, because Pakistan at that time wasn't even contiguous, right? There was West Pakistan, of course, we know that as Pakistan today, and East Pakistan, which is, of course, now Bangladesh. And there was tumult there in the formation and independence of Bangladesh.
I think that's absolutely correct. Look, when you get to the real meat of the debate on independence, and something that Pakistanis do remember every time on the 14th of August, and if you would turn on television channels, you'd hear this, is a bit of a lament about unfulfilled potential. It's a conversation about forefathers having given up their homeland, traveled hundreds of miles to come to this new country, starting off with a major refugee crisis, with no resources, and then building Pakistan into what, you know, in the 60s, Samuel Huntington called the Asian Tiger. And so there's a bit of lament on how Pakistan has not continued on that trajectory, how the problems that Pakistan faces leave Pakistan as a impoverished developing country where it could have had much more. We also have this conversation, as you mentioned, about the 1971 debacle, as it's known, where Bangladesh split from Pakistan, today's Pakistan, and became an independent country. But again, that's a conversation that's largely blocked out of the national narrative, unfortunately. So it's a mixed bag. But when you really sit down to the real conversation, Pakistanis do deep down feel that they haven't done nearly as much as this country promised.
So tell me a bit more about that, because, of course, South Asia and particularly Pakistan, from the point of view of the United States, still remains incredibly important for strategic reasons. And so how much of the position that Pakistan finds itself today, I mean, you were talking about the lament about development, how much of that can be traced back to the manner in which the nation was born?
I think in some ways it can. Pakistan had a very, very difficult start. As I mentioned, the refugee crisis, if you look at the resource base that this country had, it was non-existent. Remember, British India, and even before that, sort of the Muslim rulers of the Indian subcontinent, always saw today's Pakistan as a buffer zone. It was the least developed, one of the least developed parts of British India and pre-British India, very few industrial units, very little development. And so they didn't have a very hard start. But that's where the unfulfilled potential comes in, because within 20 years, they turned the country around into, you know, something of an Asian tiger. I mean, Pakistan was growing much faster than India. It was sort of spearheading the region in some ways. So, yes, you can trace it back to that. But then you've also got to accept that Pakistan did show real potential to become, a middle income developed country. And then things started falling apart with, various governance problems, deep-seated corruption, interrupted democracy with the military stepping in from time to time, and on and on. And so today you find Pakistan, yes, strategically crucial, a nuclear power, has a lot of feathers in its cap, and yet it creates this tension in the world. It sort of worries the world more than it interests the world, given all the sort of terrorism problems, all the law and order problems, and all the divergences of interest with the U.S. when it comes to Afghanistan.
Hmm. Well, speaking of the political challenges that Pakistan faces, I mean, it was just last month, right, that Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif stepped down following an order from the Pakistani Supreme Court over corruption, as you were talking about. Is that overshadowing at all the celebrations of the 70th anniversary?
It very much is. The whole conversation in the past couple of weeks in Pakistan, and I've been following this from close quarters, has been about what is called the Panama Gate scandal, where, you know, these Panama leaks that took down the Iceland prime minister. It saw David Cameron in the UK having to apologize because his father's name had shown up, apparently, and the Pakistani prime minister and his family's name, because they had some offshore companies that weren't declared assets. And so he did lose his job. As we speak, he is trying to get his supporters to rally behind him, denouncing the Supreme Court verdict that ousted him, and declaring that there's been a conspiracy to take him down. So very much a political crisis in Pakistan. Unfortunately, I think it's going to linger for the coming months. But right now, the talk of the town, at least in the city that I'm in, is the prime minister, the former prime minister, arriving back with his supporters, rather than independence, which, you know, literally is a couple of days away.
Well, finally, Moeed, the partition that created both the modern Indian state and Pakistan, as we've been talking about, in many ways is a wound that's never really healed. I mean, the two nations have been at war in the intervening 70 years a couple of times. I mean, how would you describe what the current state of relations are between India and Pakistan?
No, you're absolutely right. And this is one of the most unfortunate parts of this history. Four wars and a number of bouts of serious tension, constant acrimony. And these two countries really take the blame for holding the entire South Asian region back. It's the single least integrated region in the world because of this tension between India and Pakistan. Relations remain as bad as they've been. India sort of explicitly taken a policy of trying to isolate Pakistan globally, Pakistan standing up to the challenge, their sort of concerns about terrorism, their concerns about a tit-for-tat proxy war, quite frankly, even in Afghanistan. So things are as bad as they get in some ways. They're always on the verge of a crisis with nuclear weapons involved. And so they keep the world worried. I unfortunately see no easy way or no quick fix for this relationship. I think it's destined to remain tense, at least for the foreseeable future.
Mm. Well, Moeed Yusuf is an associate vice president of the Asia Center at the U.S. Institute of Peace. He spoke with us from Lahore, Pakistan, about the 70th anniversary of the partition of India and Pakistan and the creation of the Pakistani nation. Moeed, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.